Hobbes has written a book called Free Will, and it's very, very short. I mean, I cannot stress enough how short it is, as short as you're going to find any book in the market. But he makes a very interesting claim here, something that is going to upset many people, and it does. The claim is that we don't have free will. The choices that we make, the things that we think and do, we don't do them. We are not responsible for them. So that's the fundamental premise of the book. And as I said, it's really short, so you should read it for yourself. But in this podcast, I'm going to present the main arguments that he's advocating so that you can see for yourself. And there are certain objections that are naturally going to arise from this sort of argument, and he addresses them as well, and I will mention them here. But he starts the book on a very interesting note, something that is going to provoke and create a lot of objections, the moral aspect of it. He talks about certain criminals who have committed terrible crimes, and given how our judicial system functions, it has this underlying assumption that we are the agents of free will, and whatever we do out of free will. But he makes a very interesting point through these examples that suppose an animal attacks you. Let's say a dog attacks you. In that case, we are often more sympathetic towards animals. We try to understand why they would have done so. Maybe there was some psychological condition, maybe how they felt at that moment. But at no point do we ascribe this responsibility of free will to animals. We don't say that a dog had a free choice to do one thing and then another, and he picked one over another. But we do that with human beings because we assume that we have this free will. And this is a very challenging point to grasp, because in absence of free will, a lot of people might think that we won't hold people responsible for their heinous acts. But this is something he comes back to again and addresses this problem. So let's talk about what we think, what we do, who is responsible for that. So there are two things that determine whatever we think or do, everything about us. Two things. One is the biological factor. The other is social factors, how we were raised, the kind of values we acquired, the kind of things we were shown or taught during our childhood, and in fact throughout our lives. Now, the first thing, the biological aspect, we didn't choose that. We had certain genes over which we had no control. And then the second thing, which is the social upbringing, even in that case, we almost had no role to play. If we were raised in a particular culture, particular religion, or a particular time in history, there are a lot of things that are going to come with that. And Sam Harris claims that there is, apart from these two factors, there is no space left for free will. And he makes this really, really bold claim that suppose there is a murderer, a serial killer, and if you were to replace, or rather trade places with him, atom to atom, everything that he has in his body, you acquired that. Every part of brain, every cell, then you would do exactly the same thing as he does. Because As I said, there is no place for that free will, whatever we call it, in basically anything. So, to make it more clearer, let's think about any example, any particular thought. So, the next thing you are going to think, let's say in 5 minutes, you have no control over that. You don't know what thought is going to come to your mind. It will depend on a lot of factors, primarily on the biological aspect of it. What your brain is going through, how it is structured, what are the connections like. A lot depends on that. Secondly, the atmosphere around you, the environment around you, that will determine a lot of things. What thought gets generated in your mind at that point. And in neither case, you have any control. So just like you know what I'm going to say in the next 5 minutes, you don't know what you're going to think in the next 5 minutes either. But people would say there is still place for free will. That is, we can have certain thoughts, A, B, C, D, and out of them we select, there is a selection mechanism, we select certain ideas, thoughts, and act on them or ignore them. But that's also an illusion according to Sam Harris. We may think that we are selecting something out of those thoughts or ideas, but even that selection mechanism is another signal in our brain that is not in our control. And he cites many studies for that where we did experiments in the lab and people were asked to choose certain things and they were free to choose whatever they wanted to. And through their brain scans and other tests, it was almost always predetermined that whatever they are going to choose. And people themselves, when they thought or realized what they were going to choose, prior to that, certain things had happened in the brain through which we could tell what they were going to choose. So brain does this very interesting function. It kind of informs us when it is making a choice, and we think we are making that choice, and in fact we are not. We are getting informed at that point. You can do this with pretty much any experience in your life. Suppose you were to think of the name of a city, so naturally you're going to think of a set of cities at this point, and you cannot think of cities which you don't know. So you are restricted by memory and your exposure, your environment where you were raised in. So only a bunch of cities come to your mind at this point. Out of these bunch of cities, you pick one or two. Now, why do you pick them? Why not the other ones? And if somebody asked you that, you tell a very good explanation or a very good story. And that's a very interesting thing about our brain. It gives us a narrative. It gives us an explanation why it is picking something. So when you picked one city over the other, if we were to change your brain composition or the signals that were coming to your brain, and all the memory, you wouldn't pick the same brain. You wouldn't pick the same city. And that would change. And as I said, the fact that we keep mentioning to this picking mechanism, that itself is also an illusion. We are not even picking here. That picking mechanism is also working on its own. And I feel this is the most crucial point that is very hard to grasp. So it might take time for you to understand if you're new to this concept. So that's why I would request you to take your time and contemplate about it. about any thought, where it is coming from, and how you are making your decision. Just slow down that process and see for yourself where those impulses are coming from, where is that picking mechanism coming from. And you would notice that in almost all the cases, there is this great force of unconscious that is doing these things for you. And even when we are consciously picking one thing over the other, there's always a greater impulse of unconscious behind that conscious part. So when you read this and spend some time thinking about it, it'll become clearer. And now the important part of the consequences, especially in the moral and the legal sphere, because many people from this idea may interpret that a rapist or a serial killer is not really responsible for these crimes. And similarly, if somebody is successful or doing great things in life, they are also not responsible for their good deeds. And Sam Harris agrees. He says you are extremely lucky in terms of your genes, in terms of the education you got, your environment, if you're doing good things in life. And similarly, you are extremely unlucky that you're doing bad things. But he tells something very profound here. He says that just like we see snakes or crocodiles, if they attack us, we take appropriate action. Sometimes we kill them, we might imprison them, and same we can do with people without ascribing this idea, religious idea of sins to them, or just consider them bad people. They are just unlucky people. And if we work it through, we can actually help those people. For example, in certain cases, it has been found that there was a brain tumor in a serial killer's case. And if we could work on that, the biological part, we could have cured him. And of course, it's not realistically possible to alter the behavior, the violent behavior or impulses of every individual. But if we were to develop such a mechanism in science, such technology in future, we might pursue that path. Similarly, if somebody has had a very bad childhood, and probably they were raped in their childhood, and now they have these strange impulses to do the same with other people, we don't have to ignore that or forgive that, but we just need to see what can we do about it. If we can find a solution, that'll be great. And if there is no solution through science or technology, I mean medical science, then we might need to lock them up. But once again, our morality won't be something like this is a sinful person and this person deserves this kind of punishment. No, we need to take all those measures to discourage that behavior in that person and other people. But for making all those kind of political choices, we don't have to deny philosophically or scientifically that we don't have a free will. Now, as I said, this is one of the most difficult concepts to understand, because this is the closest to us. We feel it, we sense it, how it works, how we do certain things. If I want to lift my hand, I lift my hand. If I want to have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, I have that. But on some days, as Sam Harris says, on some days you have tea, on some days you have coffee, and you just feel like it. And we don't often think, where does that feeling coming from? And if you trace that question, Once again, you'll come to these conclusions, most likely, as Sam Harris is coming. Another interesting thing I find about this book and Sam Harris's arguments is that, as it is evident from rest of his work, he is a follower of Eastern philosophy, something like Buddhism. So, because you find these ideas in Eastern philosophy as well, where you're considered to be a consciousness and your body, your mind are not a part of that. And this is precisely what he's saying. In this case, in this book, he's not denying that there is nothing else to us apart from the materialistic world. He says there might be, let's say there might be a soul, but that soul or that consciousness is just witnessing. It's not making choices. So you are here to experience this world. And that is very much a part of Eastern philosophy. So I hope when you get time, you would explore these ideas and make a conscious decision to think about them. And whether or not you have free will, you can still do that. That part I'm sure of.